That's all that has ever mattered. I stop parallel to the corner. One more step, Mira. Just one more. I march onto the road, pulling my chakram out so it dangles like a harmless toy from my hands. Five buildings ahead of me, the gate is madness. Spring soldiers on the outside throw blades and fists against the bending, creaking metal, punching back the swell of Winterians who push against the other side. The Winterians cry and scream, flinching against the blows. They're confused, jerked out of their routine of work and forced back into their prison in chaos. The first soldier drops without a fight. My chakram whizzes across the back of his neck, severing the top of his spine from his skull, and thunks back into my palm as the man collapses on the soldier next to him, pulling attention to me. First the dead man's neighbor, then the man next to him, then every soldier charged with keeping order in the work camp. All eyes are on me. One lone Winterian girl against a whole battalion. One soldier steps forward, his thick sword dinged with age and use.
Herod's toy escaped, he sneers.
Herod's toy killed him, I respond, and a satisfying flash of shock takes over his face. Another voice cracks out over the street.
Mira! Run!
My eyes flick behind the line of soldiers to the gate. Connell presses against the iron, the wire leaving streaks of blood on his cheeks and arms. He's panicked, seeing me on the street. There's a light in his eyes now, a light so different from his usual hatred that I have to be imagining it. But no, it's hope. He wants me to live. Angra senses it too. He knows somehow this hope they all have. And the spring soldiers fly at the gate in one organized mass, raising all their weapons at the same moment. A strangled moan pops out of my lungs. Angra's dark magic, he's told them to... They start striking to kill now, jabbing their blades through the metal, stabbing chests and necks, no longer mere warning blows. I can feel Angra's order pulsing out of their driven bodies. Slaughter them. My chest numbs, and for once I know what it is. Cold, icy cold, darting out to my shoulders and rushing down to my fingers. The conduit's power churns around me, surging in and out of my body like an uncontrollable snowstorm, begging to coat the world in glorious white. Winter has a conduit now, too, and we won't be weak anymore. I drop my chakram at my feet and shoot my hands out, fingers stretching to the Winterians in front of me. The cold blasts out of me, an eruption of such perfect chill that I wonder if I'm nothing more than a snowstorm now. A great twirling column of flakes. The cold rushes around the spring soldiers and plunges through the gate, flooding every frail, white-haired body. Every pair of wide blue eyes, every bleeding, tired soul with strength, power, energy, healing their bruises and soothing their cuts and making them stronger, stronger, stronger. The magic pours until every free space in every body is filled with strength. Their eyes shine brighter. Their bodies stand straighter. Their fists clench tighter. Cold and frost, so much beautiful power that when the icy sensation stops, I'm left gasping in the aftermath of such wonder. Adrenaline courses through me, blissfully combating the pull of exhaustion that makes me sway forward under all the power I just exerted. The Winterians scream. Something far beyond their cries of pain and anguish, something breaking out of them in a rush of freedom. The spring soldiers' attack pauses in the echoing war cry from their prisoners. And the Winterians, their eyes fiery with life, slam forward, breaking open the gate with a frantic determination.
Attack!
A spring soldier cries and charges at me. I hook my chakram with my boot and kick it into the air, grabbing it and launching it in a great spin of death into the approaching stampede of spring soldiers. A few fall as my chakram smacks back into my palm, but the soldiers are too close now, a few seconds from colliding with me. I return the chakram to my back and yank out the sword and dagger I stole from Herod, body coiling down. 4 seconds, 3. The farthest soldiers go down as one, their legs falling out from under them. The next row glances back, panicked, and falls just as easily, pulled to the ground by the mad hatred of 16 years of oppression. The Winterians rise up and over the Spring Battalion in a deadly wave of destruction, tearing weapons out of hands and turning those weapons on the shocked faces of soldiers who never thought they would lose. The last row of Spring soldiers reaches me, caught between fear behind them and fear ahead. My dagger jabs into one's stomach, my sword through another's neck. I twirl between the soldiers, my body a machine of slice and stab and duck. I move around one last dying man, my boots kicking up dust around me, and stop in front of Connell. He's bloody and wild, his white hair streaked with red, his hands clasped around a pair of short knives. Beside him, Garrigan is just as untamed. A beast inside them unleashed, and behind them are the other Winterians. Arms clamp around my neck in a storm of white and tears.
I knew you'd free us, Nessa breathes.
Connell steps forward, his knives glinting with spring blood.
We're not free yet. What next, my queen?
My queen? How does he know? I pull back from Nessa and stare at them. All of them, every eager face, every innocent, patient soul accepting the power from me without question, without hesitation. And I feel Hannah in me, her gentle, waiting presence, as connected to the conduit's power as I am. She's in all the Winterians, too, connecting us in an inexplicable and marvelous world all our own.
She is my daughter,
she whispers to them, a voice so quiet they could mistake it for their own thoughts.
It's going to be all right. I'm sorry I lied to you, but your freedom is so close.
The hope on the dirt-smudged faces fills me with a different emotion, one that snuffs out any fear of who I am now. Happiness.
Cordell and Autumn are at Spring's gates, but our freedom is not theirs to win,
I shout over the crowd. The next words stick in my throat, building and building alongside all the bubbling anxiety, the years of abuse, the scars and blood and gore.
We are Winter!
Connell and Garrigan tip their heads back, arms outstretched as they shout to the sky. A battle cry that spreads to every Winterian, their voices creaking, their eyes shining.
We are Winter!
Nessa echoes, and leaps over the fallen Spring bodies, running up the road with her stolen sword blazing above her head. They follow her, dashing over bodies, waving weapons like banners of victory. Their strength, conduit given or not, is invigorating, filling me with my own magic. I want to bask in it forever.
You're so close now, Hannah says.
I fall into line with them, running just as hard, screaming just as loud, lost in the voices and the power and the lives of the Winterians. 30. We follow the sounds of battle to the square at Abril's front gate and find Spring soldiers sprinting in perfectly lined groups, cannons firing with lethal precision, cranks lifting weapons up and down the walls. Angra's conduit pushes them with a threat that makes every movement deliberate, in line, perfect. A horn cries out as we surge down the street leading to the gate. Angra's faultlessly aligned soldiers pivot toward us, snapping out of their conduit stupor. Angra warned them we were coming, but knowing does not a prepared army make. We raise our weapons, raise our voices, raise our speed. We are one body now, one all-consuming wave of white and filth and 16 years of death. Angra's men realign themselves to face us, their backs to the gate, more than half of their focus pulled away from Noam's attacking army to us. The one thing Abril, in all its war-mindedness, never prepared for? A breach inside the wall. We collide with Angra's men, pouring into them like a plague. They return with just as much force, pushing into us with strength pulled from the decay in Angra's conduit. There are only a few hundred of us, and most are no more fighters than the children and elderly who stayed behind. Our advantage of surprise won't hold for long. I impale a spring soldier and drop to the ground, pulling his body down beside me to serve as a shield. The square before the gate is nearly the size of Angra's palace grounds, wide and open to allow for ease of movement. Two staircases frame the gate and lead to the walkway above, and a small building leans against the wall on my left. The gatehouse. A group of Winterian men tackle a charging cluster of spring soldiers, and I use the chaos to shield myself from other enemies. They fall backward, and I get up and run, dashing over bodies, discarded blades, stacks of crates. The iron tang of blood and old weapons hangs in hot, heavy balls of repulsion, smacking into me as I barrel for the thin wooden door of the gatehouse. I sheathe my blades and draw out my chakram before planting a firm kick that sends the door banging into the wall. Inside the gatehouse, two soldiers flip around and, just as quickly, two blades fly through air, small knives that spin with desperate determination for me. I duck, and one flies over my shoulder while the other grazes my wrist. But it's my turn now, so I bite back my wince. I let the chakram go, my blade slicing the soldiers' necks in death blows before it shoots back to me. As their bodies fall, I jump over them, eyeing the lever in the center of the room. A thick metal rod stretches into the air at an angle, nearly as tall as me, from a hodgepodge of gears. The rod sticks out more to the left than the right, so maybe if I move it to the right. I holster the chakram and throw all my weight into the rod. It groans against my movements, the old iron creaking in angry rebuttal against being opened. I brace my foot on the wall of the gatehouse, pulling and heaving, begging the stupid thing to just give in and release. A hand slides on the lever over mine. I flinch back, already half reaching for my knife, when Garrigan stops me. Connell stumbles in behind him, a bloody sword in one hand, and moves around me to grab the rod too. We heave as one, and the crank releases under our collective weight, giving up as if it can feel the impending collapse of its kingdom. It slams into place, and beyond the gatehouse, beyond the fight, the massive wall of iron starts to lift into the air, grinding and groaning. Connell, Garrigan, and I run out of the gatehouse. Winterians and spring soldiers alike pause, eyeing the lifting gate, analyzing what it means for Abril. As soon as the gate gets high enough, a wave of men pours through, adding Cordell's green and gold to Spring's black sun armor and Winter's stark white hair. Mixed with the Cordellan soldiers are copper-skinned men in maroon and orange that fly between batches of enemies with an exotic grace, slicing through flesh with hair-thin blades and hurling balls that spew toxic smoke. Their heir may be too young to wield her conduit, but Autumn's soldiers can still make a sword fight look like a choreographed dance and wield weapons that are just as functional as they are gruesome. Like chakrams. As a few spinning metal discs soar into the air, I grin. Sir originally got my chakram from Autumn, and seeing dozens of them shooting all around me now makes me feel even more united in this effort. A Winterian wielding an Autumnian weapon, using Cordellan allegiance to bring Spring crumbling down. The Winterians roil into a frenzy, adding their brute hatred to Cordell's organized attacks and Autumn's skilled warriors. But Angra has numbers. It makes for a horrifying and mesmerizing fight, black and orange and green and white. An arrow whizzes past my ear from somewhere on the other side of the square. My eyes find its source, and a white-haired man in Cordell's armor slashes through the spring archer before he is swallowed by a group of black-clad soldiers.
Mother? Or maybe Greer or Hen?
I dart around parrying enemies, duck under flying blades. Angra's men swivel the wall's cannons to focus on the square inside the gate. Their blasts send mounds of earth scattering into the air around me, making it rain rocks and rubble. Blades up, I slash blindly at spring soldiers where I can as I work my way to that flash of white hair in Cordellan armor. A pair locked in combat swings around me, and I twist to narrowly avoid a blade to the head, sliding on my knees in a small patch of grass on the other side of the square where Abril's slums rise into the sky. For a breath, I pause, scanning the area, muscles tight and waiting, until a blade lunges at me. I spin and catch it, instinct driving me as I see beyond the blade to the soldier holding it. Not just a soldier. Angra. And it isn't just a blade. One hand holds a thin, strong sword. The other grasps his staff, a weapon in its own right. Angra wears his own version of Spring's armor, but his is fine and gleaming. He pulls back, taking his sword and staff with him, and glares down at me as our men kill each other around us.
All this time, he growls. I should have felt the magic in you long before you were able to use it.
My fingers turn white on my blades.
You shouldn't have let yourself become corrupted.
Angra growls and rears back. I leap to him, talking as fast as possible, squeezing words into the space between us.
There's a way to defeat it, Angra, I hiss. The decay. If you let the other monarchs know, we can vanquish it like they almost did thousands of years ago.
Angra pauses, blade and staff raised, his eyes narrowing in something like shock. I hold my breath in the roar of adrenaline around me, latching onto the flicker of hope in his face. But someone shouts my name. A distant warning on the edge of my subconscious. I flinch and Angra strikes, swinging his sword out, his staff close behind. He bats the knife from my hand as I drop, sliding away from the falling metal. He's far more experienced than me and uses my momentum to bring his sword back to meet me halfway, his blade slicing clean through my shoulder. I groan and fall on my arm, pain searing across my skin. Can I heal myself? Angra doesn't give me time to try. He drops to the ground on top of me, a knee pinning me to the grass between one of his dilapidated slum buildings and the chaotic battle. He swings his face down, blonde curls matted with sweat and filth.
I don't need saving,
he spits, and flies back off me, readying for another strike. Angra comes at me again, and I release my sword from my injured right arm to flip backward, watching his blade impale the grass where my head was a heartbeat ago. He slashes and thrusts, not giving me a chance to retaliate, chasing me as I scramble on hands and knees across the lawn to the square. Legs fly out of my way, allies cut down by Angra's swinging, biting weapons, forging a haphazard path through the chaos that allows me to crawl away.
Mira!
Someone screams, but I don't have time to look for who it is. A spring soldier runs at us, intent on helping his king. But Angra rounds on him in a flurry of hot anger.
She's mine!
I use that opening to hurl my last weapon. My chakram flies through the debris-heavy air, only to smack feebly off Angra's armor. He knocks it out of its spin, sending it skittering over the ground, and turns to me, manic glee streaked over his face.
That's all you have? Hundreds of years of war, and this is your kingdom's grand finale? No.
The voice rumbles over the lawn, over the world. It floods me from the recesses of Angra's cruel nightmare when I knelt on the floor of a cottage in January and Sir held me, rocking me back and forth. But this isn't a nightmare. This is real.
better than anything I dared dream up myself. And as my eyes lock onto him, I don't know how I'll ever be able to breathe again. Sir is alive.
Angra turns as Sir leaps through the air, two curved knives slicing the wind into fragments and speeding straight for Angra's heart. Only a breath passes before Angra reacts, swinging his staff up to stop one of the blades and his sword to catch the other.
Mira!
Mothar slides to the ground beside me, his arms coming under my shoulders to pull me to my feet. I blink at him, caught in another cruel dream.
Mothar's here, and Sir...
I stare, trying to get the last image I have of Sir to make sense with what I see now. Bleeding and broken on the ground outside of Bathai. Dancing through the air on grunts and thrusts, driving Angra back just as viciously as Angra returns his blows. His body is whole and strong, flying around as his muscles do what they were made to do. He and Angra are matched blade for blade, moving before us through the bloody massacre of war. My fingers dig into Mothar's arm, my heart freezing.
Sir?
I breathe. The tension in my chest loosens. It doesn't matter who I am now, queen or not, because Sir's here, Sir's alive, and he'll be able to help me through this. When I look at Mothar, he nods.
You healed him, Mira. Everyone thought he was dead, but when he awoke after the battle, he told us you healed him. A fluke in conduit magic that somehow you harnessed,
Mothar whispers. I grab onto his words and try to fit them into the gaping puzzle around me. What I remember most about Sir's death is my desperation, my thoughtless need, pure and strong, for him to live. Maybe that was a type of surrender, opening myself up to anything, everything that could save him. An unconscious decision like when I healed the boy. Mothar reads the distance in my eyes, my swelling exuberance. He bows his head.
My queen.
That pulls me back to the present, roaring and horrible. To Mothar, a broken look in his eyes.
You know?
I gasp on the words and feel everything else come crashing down on me. All of Mothar's worries and concerns and strain. How he wanted so badly to be enough in a station where he never would be. And now. None of that matters because it isn't him anymore. Mothar bobs his head again. Around us, the battle rages on, but in that one moment of looking at each other, I can't tell if he's relieved or scared. All I can feel is his strength, the determined way he looks at me, a soldier to his ruler. He'll hold on as long as I need him to. The locket half still sits around his neck, a physical reminder of the lie of his life. My eyes lock on it before swinging away, a rush of adrenaline pushing through me as I look back at Angra and Sir trapped in a flurry of swords. Angra's conduit dances through the air, and Sir's focus follows it, his gaze hungry and desperate. A weight drops in my stomach. Sir needs to know what it really is, what he's really fighting. The way he looks at Angra's staff, like he wants to obliterate it into a million pieces, that cannot happen. Angra's conduit cannot be broken, the magic allowed to link with him in an endless feed for the decay. A blade comes out of nothing, the cannon debris making the air a dark and dangerous place. I scream and shove Mothar down, buckling under the sword as the spring soldier continues his swipe through the air. Mothar turns, throws me his blade, and I grab it mid-air before barreling headfirst into the soldier's stomach. We fall, rolling down a slight incline in a fit of darkness and dirt as my sword slides home into the soldier's gut. A series of screams. Names shouted in rapid order, panicked screeches that make me pivot in the dirt.
Mothar, grab it!
William!
Mothar!
I struggle to my feet, eyes flashing over the space now between me, Mothar, Sir. A swell of horror pulses in me and I'm frozen, watching it all happen. Sir knocks Angra's staff from his hands. It flies through the air, flipping end over end to land in a clatter at Mothar's feet. Sir lunges away from Angra as he reaches out to Mothar,
something horrible and terrified exploding out of him like nothing I've ever seen. Panic pushes up my throat, tasting like the iron tang of blood. Mothr picks up the staff.
Break it!
Sir's voice is strangled. He swipes at Angra, knocking him to the ground.
Destroy it! I will kill you!
Angra screams, scrambling against the dirt. He flies up and Sir tackles him next to Mothr's feet. One of Sir's curved knives slams into Angra's shoulder, pinning him to the earth with Sir hovering a breath above him. Mothr looks at me. There's that determined severity again, some great pull of desperation. He'll protect me. He'll keep me safe. He can still do this one thing, even if he isn't who he always thought he was. He raises the staff over his head. Angra's conduit. The decay that overtook the land, the hideous, unstoppable evil that came to Angra, joined with him and has been gaining strength from his corrupt magic use. Mothr's arms tighten against the coming impact as he pulls the staff through the air. A slow and painful draw. Dismay overcomes me. So palpable it rushes in molten rivers through my body as all the last lingering pieces click and I fly forward, scrambling toward Mothr.
Mothr, no!
I shout. Stop! But he doesn't hear me. He doesn't know, doesn't even think about it. No one did. No one would have thought the answer was so simple, the power so close. The staff cracks against the earth in a glass-shattering burst. Darkness explodes out of it, a storm unleashed, a funnel of smoke that erupts in a shaft of black. In the chaos, the surrounding battle halts. The wind whipping into screams, desperate fingers of sound that plunge through the crowd of watching soldiers. The column of black launches up into the sky where thick clouds have gathered, twirling around and around in a vortex that will destroy us all. I throw my arms around Mothr and pull him back from the shattered staff, the embodiment of all that has held us captive for so long. We collapse on the ground, my arms around his shoulders, his eyes twisted in confusion. Around us, everyone has stopped. Spring, Cordelin, Autumnian, Winterian. Everyone casts aside their fighting to gape in unabashed wonder. Everyone except Angra. His eyes meet mine, barely 2 steps from where I cling to Mothr. The hilt of the knife sticks up in the gap between Angra's breastplate and arm piece. Blood runs from a gash through his cheek. But his eyes flash. The pale green depths reflecting the whirring gale. The expansion of magic in the royal conduits that even he didn't know about until he saw me. Until he pieced together my use of the magic without the locket and realized what I am now. The magic and decay that are locked in his conduit will join with him, feed into him, become one. He will be able to use his magic for evil at an unstoppable rate, without a staff or an object conduit. Because he will become the magic's conduit, and the decay will grow more powerful than anyone can control. The column of black sucks into a thin line and holds, waiting, ticking through time. On a great gust of wind, it explodes, slamming into the ground and unfolding over us with a powerful burst of air and debris. Mothr throws himself on top of me, and we bury our faces in each other as the force tosses rocks through the air. It's over. Just like that. No final explosion, no departing scream of death, just nothing. Like it was never anything more than the shattered ball of glass and metal at Mothr's feet. I push away from Mothr, but I know what I'll see before my eyes find it. The magic in me whispers it in the deepest, most open parts of my mind, a quiet nudge of knowledge. Sir sits back on his heels, staring with wide eyes at the empty splotch of dirt under him. His knife still sits in the earth, poised vertically against the gentle current of wind. But Angra is gone. 31. The world is wrong. tilted off balance, and when I stand on shaky legs, I fall forward, scrambling in the air. Sir catches me. He cradles me against his chest, his strong arms wrapping around me so tightly I know it must be a dream. And I expect him to call me his sweet girl and for Allison to be just behind us, serving dinner to Nessa and her family. But Sir is real. He is here. He is alive. And when I push back from him, look up at his face, the world stops tilting quite so much. His lips part.
It's over.
My eyes fall behind him, to the empty expanse of dirt where Angra's body was. Like the staff breaking destroyed him. Like it was just that easy. Everyone thinks it was. Everyone, including the spring soldiers who dropped their weapons at the disappearance of their king and magic, now cowering in reluctant surrender while their enemies rejoice. Green and gold and maroon and white bodies dance around the square, cheering at the cloudy sky. I close my eyes, breathe in, focusing on the air flowing in and out of my lungs, on Sir's arms around my shoulders. I focus beyond him, on the sound of the Winterian's pure and shameless happiness, turning this miserable city into a paradise, just for a moment.
Mira.
I open my eyes to see Sir staring down at me, his face locked in an expression I've never seen on him before. It takes me a moment to realize it's admiration.
We decided long ago that I would be the one to tell you. The others who escaped, I mean.
He whispers.
I don't know how Angra found out. I should have.
My body goes cold. The swirling conduit magic now awakened and wild. I inhale, trembling as I put a hand on Sir's arm. No. I shake my head. It was Hannah's secret to tell. Not yours. Sir frowns.
Hannah?
I shrug, not sure how I can explain this, but Sir shakes it away. He takes a step backward and drops to his knees as he lifts a fist up to me. Dangling out of that fist is a silver chain.
My queen,
is all he says. I flinch, hating the fear that blossoms at the title. I don't want him to call me that. But the way he looks up at me is something I've wanted all my life. Like he sees me, truly sees me, no matter how I am. Covered in blood and dirt and dust, glowing with the potential of a renewed kingdom. Like he sees all the sacrifices he's made and doesn't regret a single one. I reach for the locket, but another hand beats me there. My fingers pause, outstretched in the dusty air, lingering over Mothar's hand as he takes the locket from his father. Mothar unclasps the other half and slides it off his neck. He holds both halves out to me, his jewel-blue eyes glistening gray under the overcast sky.
Yours, my queen,
he says. His hands shake and he runs his tongue over his lips. Everything about him is strong, unwavering. But the look in his eyes speaks of a deeper fear. Fear of unbecoming. Fear of all his many, many responsibilities shifting onto someone else's shoulders. I lift my hand. 100 things push at me, 100 different ways I want to apologize or grovel or cry. I'm sorry it's me. I'm sorry his whole life was created to keep me safe, his entire existence shattered around this one simple lie. I'm sorry we had to grow up so abruptly. I'm sorry for everything. But I don't say any of that. I take the locket pieces from his hand, keeping my eyes on his. My mouth open like maybe, just maybe, I'll find the right words. Mothar exhales when the locket leaves his skin. He rises, standing with the weight of all that has happened. His lips twitch into the pale beginnings of a smile, but he stays there, suspended between happiness and shock.
I am yours to command, my queen,
he whispers, and bows his head. I place my palm on his cheek before I even realize I've moved, the cut on my shoulder making me cringe.
I wish we wouldn't hurt. Not now, not after all this.
Numbness shoots up my hand, and my eyes widen. I didn't mean to call on the magic, but it's alive now, awakened. And the numbness climbs, grows, and surges from my palm into Mother's cheek. He gasps. My whole body goes cold, icy and brilliant, and a new light shines in Mother's eyes. It chases away his exhaustion and fear, filling him with the same strength that filled the other Winterians. Nothing definite. Just a small ray to keep him going, to keep his uncertainty at bay until he finds the will to face it. Is he relieved to have the burden of being king gone? Or is he just afraid? Mother steps back, pulling out of my hand, and slides to the ground, mimicking Sir's stance. Behind them, the cheering has dissipated into reverent awe, and every Winterian slowly slides to the ground. Their heads bow, their white hair smudged brown and red and black. My breathing tightens, and I can't decide whether I want them to stop or not. They look so happy, so whole. And I can't break that happiness, no matter how terrifying it is that I'm the reason they're bowing. Me, the orphaned soldier girl. I spot Dendera near the gate with Hen beside her as they kneel, both of them locked in an embrace that's tight and intimate and makes me nearly intoxicated with happiness. Greer and Finn lean on each other, a bloody gash through Finn's left leg. Connell and Garrigan and Nessa and even Deborah. Everyone is happy and here and safe. And Theron. Behind them all, Theron lingers beyond the gate, a contingent of his father's battle-bruised men around him. His eyes meet mine across the expanse between us, and he smiles, a slow, deliberate smile that echoes the reverence of this moment. He bows his head, mimicking the Cordellans, the Autumnians, absorbing the awe and wonder of a kingdom that isn't theirs. All of them smiling under the relief that came when Angra's body vanished. Maybe Angra did die. Maybe the decay disintegrated and ripped him down with it. So many maybes. So many years of thinking maybe they'll come, maybe they'll save us, maybe we'll see our kingdom whole again someday. I bend down to Mother and Sir and put one hand on each of their shoulders. They look up at me. Tears making them look morbidly happy. I exhale and smile. Let's go home. With Angra gone, the other three work camps fall easily. Spring dissolves into a panicked chaos without its king, which makes our merged army's job even easier as we move through the kingdom, fighting off the soldiers who hold the other Winterians captive. Any exhaustion or fear or pain the Winterians felt in the camps is snuffed out beneath the roaring joy we bring when we save them. It's something I never get tired of, seeing their faces alight with the knowledge that they are free. 2 weeks pass. 2 weeks filled with freeing the other three camps, tending to the wounds of my people, slowly feeding nutrients back into them. The Autumn Army departs once the last work camp is free, but Cordell stays, a choice I try not to question. Theron is quick to offer food and supplies from his army, and I take what he gives before Noam can say anything to the contrary. The Winterians see a unified front, soldiers and food and medicine, not a queen who, until a few weeks ago, had no idea who she was. Or a king who, a few months ago, wanted to dominate their land rather than save them. I will do everything I can to keep it that way, long enough for permanent healing to settle into their bodies and minds. The permanent healing starts the moment we see January. Winter's capital sits just inside the border, a few hours' ride from spring. The vibrant cherry trees and emerald grass of spring fade to winter's fields of white perfection, unbroken rolling hills of snow and frozen clusters of icy, ivory trees. The change is instant, sweeping over me in a rush of... right. This is right. The chill, the frozen forests, the way everything is white. The sky, the ground, the air. This is home. But it's January we all wait for with breathless excitement. January, our lost capital, a city I've only ever seen in crafted memories. The deeper we plunge into winter, the more my chest tightens until I fear I'll turn solid from anticipation long before we reach our destination. The other Winterians see January 1st, the hazy outline of a city in the distance. They alert me with a cry of excitement and burst free from the ranks of Cordell's army with renewed vigor. Hundreds of feet pound in sudden delight over the empty fields, the vibrations shaking the whole world to bits. January sits ahead of me under a snowless gray sky. Towns lie around the main bulk of the city, its walls shattered, rocks torn into a lumpy, uneven perimeter on the horizon. Within it, a few towers still stand, their determined fingers reaching up to the sky like nothing's wrong, like they have been just waiting for us to come back. You didn't kill us, Angra, and we will rise again. I gallop alongside the other Winterians, but pull my horse to a stop, a great war beast borrowed from Cordell's army. The Winterians continue running, too caught in their exuberance to notice I've stopped. My horse dances nervously on the old snow caked on the field, winter's pale grass popping through the thin layer of ice beneath his hooves. Sir pulls up alongside me, both of us sending clouds of frosty breath into the air.
It'll need rebuilding, and we'll need to barter more rations from Cordell, he says.
A cold wind pushes through the white cotton shirt I borrowed from Theron. We're already indebted to him and his father more than we could ever repay. And the thought that we'll need even more makes my stomach pinch with dread. I know what Noam will want for all he's given. Access to the Clarins, to winter, in an attempt to find the chasm of magic. Maybe that's why he hasn't stopped Theron from providing us with supplies. Maybe that's why he hasn't returned to Cordell yet. Why he's let his army linger around us like guards standing watch over an investment. Whatever his reason, we need him and what he offers, and until he tries to collect, I can't worry about it. Too much. I know.
But it'll be good for them.
Sir shifts on his saddle, one hand relaxing on the reins.
It'll be good. Rebuild the city as they heal. They need this.
I nod. We all need this. We need to fix something, work through it with our bare hands and feel the life flow back into our veins, to do something true and brilliant and right. Sir looks sidelong at me, turned away enough that I can't see his expression.
You're just like her.
I search his face. Hannah? He nods.
Every moment of your life.
Cold twinges through me. His way of telling me I can do this. I can bring our kingdom together again, lead them on to a better future. Whatever that future holds, Angra resides there too. I swallow, catching my lower lip between my teeth as I inhale the cold, cold air. We've been so busy with the happiness of freeing the other work camps, of traveling to winter, that I haven't wanted to ruin the joy. It's so fragile, this joy. And a part of me doesn't want to say anything, doesn't want to draw attention to bad things until we need to. But not telling Sir could make it worse when the time does come. If it comes. If my suspicions are right. If Angra isn't dead and his threat not over and everything we fought for still only an illusion of true peace.
I don't think Angra died,
I whisper, a sad sound on the chill air.
And his magic. It's worse than we thought. Much worse.
Sir doesn't say anything. And for a moment, I think maybe my voice got sucked away on the wind. I look at him, and he wears that same impenetrable expression he got when I returned from Linya with the locket half. Scared and determined. Like he's staring down the future and doesn't have room to fear the past. I touch the locket at my neck. It's whole now. Whole and empty. Powerless. But touching it gives me a strange calm. Just like that lapis lazuli stone. Just like hope. The Winterians around me think the power is now safely back in the locket. They think all the times I used it were what Mothr told me. A fluke. A desperate surge brought on by how far we had fallen. It doesn't occur to them that the magic could be anywhere else now. And I'm not sure I want to correct them. Not just them, though. Cordell, too. Noam, especially.
One thing at a time,
Sir says. His eyes meet mine, showing me how tired he is, how scared.
We'll handle the future, one thing at a time.
I start to nod when horses gallop through the crowd of still-running Winterians and canter to a halt beside us. Theron and Noam shiver in their saddles, eyes darting between January, Sir, and me. Noam at least tries to look dignified in his coldness, while Theron wraps his arms around himself and lets his teeth clack together like hooves on the plain. Mothr pulls his horse between mine and Theron's, an eyebrow lifted as he assesses our nearly frozen foreign guests.
Tell me there's a cloak shop somewhere in there,
Theron says, a shiver making him twitch awkwardly on his horse. Mothr laughs, a sharp and beautiful sound that I haven't heard in years. He's been smiling a little more each day, that beautiful, full-face smile that makes everything around him light up.
Poor Cordellan Prince, can't handle a little chill. A little chill?
Theron squeaks. He motions at the army, the Cordellans looking just as frozen and uncomfortable as their leaders.
We're going to have nothing but soldier icicles by the end of this. My father sneezed earlier and it froze in midair.
I giggle from my horse and Theron glances at me. The look in his eyes shifts from light-hearted laughter to something deeper, something lingering from our anxious kiss in the halls of Angra's palace. Mothr adjusts himself on his horse between us, his jaw setting. I tear my eyes away from Theron as a slow grin spreads across my face, and I want to laugh at the absurdity of this situation. Normal problems. Normal worries about suitors. It's what Sir wanted all along, wasn't it? And after everything, normal problems feel wonderful. Noam grunts on the other side of his son but doesn't say anything. Whether it's because he has nothing to say or his lips have frozen shut, I can't tell. We've yet to discuss the marriage arrangement, whether Arrhythm still wants to ally his son with a season, or if Winter's growing debt to Cordell is enough of a connection. He started to ask me a few days ago, when we were resting between raids on work camps. Noam stretched out his hand to shake mine, and when our skin touched, I saw again the vibrant image of him kneeling at his wife's bedside. A connection that comes from the fact that I'm a conduit myself. A connection the other royal conduit bearers must not be aware of, except for Angra, and only because he used the decay. Noam must think I'm just a weak, unstable queen who trembles when she touches him. I think he needs to believe that, though. It's better if he underestimates me, if he has no idea about my true power. An extra boost in Winter's favor when he does decide to collect on all he's given us.
If you're done bickering about the chill,
Sir cuts in,
I believe we have introductions to make.
He meets my eyes, beams, and kicks his horse to a gallop, hooves tearing up clumps of melted snow as he darts between the running Winterians. Theron and Noam plunge after him, weaving in and out of my running white-haired people toward a city many of us don't remember. Only Mothr lingers, his exhales releasing bursts of icy clouds between us, his eyes on me as I watch everyone around us. I'm sorry, I exhale. Mothr's horse dances on the snow, disturbed by our tension. I peel my gaze away from the running horde to meet Mothra's sapphire eyes for more than a passing glance. It's the longest either of us has looked at each other since the battle in April. And the gaze is heavy with apology. He snorts air out of his nose in a soft, incredulous laugh.
Don't apologize. You didn't do anything wrong.
His focus sweeps over the city ahead of us.
At all.
I know, I stop short, and Mothra pivots back to me.
I know,
he echoes, and the smile he gives me is genuine. He shifts again, tightening the reins in his hands.
If either of us should feel bad, it's me. William told us the truth after you were captured, and all I could think was, you're the one who has the responsibility now. I'm free.
Mothra keeps his gaze firmly on the horizon as he talks, and if I hadn't been looking at him, I might have accepted his lighthearted tone, his jovial manner. But I watch his face as he speaks. Watch the way his eyes narrow. His lips pull into a thin line. There's far too much truth in what he says. I'm free. Maybe it's not a freedom he wants. When I was in Cordell, I start, and I had to play the part of their future queen, I pretended I was... My words catch and I chuckle. I pretended I was you. My confession hangs in the air, a whispered strand of words that hovers in the falling flakes of snow. Mothra smiles at me through it, some of his tension softening before he drops his head in a small bow.
My queen, he says in response.
He kicks his horse into a gallop that sends them both launching into the running horde, another body racing for January's wall. I watch him go, my chest unwinding. We're really here. January. A city I've seen only in memories and dreams. Its cobblestone streets, its cottages, the way snow falls constantly, an ever-present rain of perfect, unique flakes. It needs to snow. It needs to always snow. Something wet tingles my nose. I look up, my mouth opening in a true, pure grin. Snowflakes fall now, steady and strong, pouring down all the way to January, covering us as we should be covered in winter. Breathtaking, frozen, perfect winter. I urge my horse into a gallop, the steady beating of his hooves chasing after the others toward January, a place of snow and light.
Your city.
Hannah's voice fills my senses, pulls up from the conduit magic that resides in me. She could talk to me all along, it appears, but didn't want to risk revealing what I am to Angra, which is why she never stopped us from looking for the locket halves. It was all a cover to protect Winter's line. And the dreams and visions were meant to ease me into conduits and magic, being linked to her in a way I never thought possible. My mother. I still have trouble adjusting to having a mother at all. I'm not sure where it fits in this new world. Our city, I amend. We wouldn't even be alive if it weren't for you. A knot of sadness forms in my head, Hannah's regret and pain.
But you will succeed where I failed.
She pauses, and I can feel a wave of her remorse in the silence.
I wanted to tell you. So many times I wanted to speak to you. I couldn't risk you realizing who you are before you were old enough to use your magic. And if Angra found out what you are when you were still too young...
She pauses, gasps.
Our kingdom would have been lost forever.
I know, I say. It's all I can say. Today isn't a day for tearful apologies. Today is a day for inhaling the cold, snowy air, watching the Winterians as I gallop through them, seeing their smiling, radiant faces. I spot Nessa up ahead, laughing and throwing snowballs at Connell. I see Dendera on her own horse, racing Hen to the wall, happy and free like they always should have been. People in the light, not just words in the dark. It doesn't feel real. I've tried so long and so hard to be just Mira, but who I am isn't as simple as just anything. It's like this snowstorm over January. One flake falls, twisting down through the empty sky. One frozen speck of snow, then another, and another. And before I know it, the roads will be covered in dozens of distinct flakes, all these little pieces combining to create one giant, volatile snowstorm. Something beautiful and dangerous and epic. I'm Hannah's daughter. I'm winter's conduit. I'm a warrior, a soldier, a lady, a queen. And most of all, as I plunge across the snowfield toward January's silent ruin, I'm Mira. And no matter what Angra might try to do, he will not stop me from washing away the ashes of this kingdom's past and filling our lives with the glorious, icy piece of snow. This is Kate Rudd. We hope you have enjoyed this unabridged production of Snow Like Ashes by Sarah Rash. This program was produced by Elgin Productions. The director was Dustin Anderson. Executive producer, Caitlin Gehring. Text copyright 2014 by Sarah Rash. Production copyright 2014 by HarperCollins Publishers. All rights reserved. Thank you for listening.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.